I'm gonna bang that gavel for me. Good afternoon, everybody. The Chicago State University Board of Trustees meeting, Facilities Committee meeting, September 24, 2010, is called to order.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Here.
Trustee Scott is outside.
Was the notice of meeting made public?
Yes, the notice was made public.
Approval of previous meetings?
I move that we approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Second.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
All right. Michael or Chief Watson, good to see you.
Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon to the members of the board, Mr. Cage, Dr. Brooks Williams, and Mr. Trish. We're here this afternoon basically to give you guys an update as to what we've been doing in facilities since our last board meeting. And I'd like to go right into the appendix and the summary of these certain projects that we have been doing with CDB as well as our own internal projects. And of course, we're still waiting for a couple of things to take place for CDB projects. And that is basically waiting for funding to be released for the priority projects that we noted at our last meeting there. Needless to say, we could certainly use the assistance of the Board of Trustees to assist us in getting some of these funds released for our use. And I'm certain that with you guys' intervention, we might be able to move that process along pretty rapidly.
Specifically Douglas.
Now,
specifically Douglas. Okay.
But specifically our Douglas Hall project, because therein resides our pharmacy program, which most certainly has to advance itself in very near future because we're up for accreditation for that. But I'd also like to go ahead and give you a brief synopsis of some of the things that we've been doing in terms of what has been released by CDB. And those are things such as the emergency roof projects, and those projects essentially are directed to the education building as well as to operations and maintenance. Needless to say, the emergency project for education has been started, and it was initiated with the abatement of those spaces above the roof as well as on the floor. And our miscellaneous repairs to the library, that was another project that we did to basically ameliorate some of the shortcomings of previous construction under another project. Our elevator project is going well. We do anticipate the completion of the first elevator by October 23rd, and that's with the Cook Building. Our CTA turnaround, and if I'm moving too fast here, please let me know.
No, I just want to make sure, Mike, that you hit, and you covered a couple of them. I just want to make sure you touched on Douglas because of pharmacy.
Yes,
sir. You touched on the emergency roof projects, the elevated projects, and CTA turnaround. So
yes,
as long as you hit those four things.
Okay, and of course, CTA is going on. I would say we're roughly, I'm going to approximate a number of about 99%. And the reason that I don't say 100% is because we still have a little bit more signage for public safety to install around the CTA turnaround. But beyond that, the CTA part has been completed and has been turned over to the CTA for their use. I've already touched on the Douglas Hall projects and the roof of that building. All of the preliminary documentation has been submitted to CDB for us to go ahead with that project. We're just waiting for funding to be made available. Our fitness center project, which you'll see on our facilities capital development, that has been completed. It's a really fantastic looking facility. It's been pretty well 100% overhauled and rehabilitated with all of the necessary bells and whistles, painting, and new equipment. That's our Jacoby Dickens Center. We are still working in the Williams Science Center. And it's not so much as the laboratories right now, it's just rehabilitating that space for IT's use. And we do anticipate that project to be completed by October 4th. Beyond that, as you can see throughout the description of the things that we've been involved with, there are still ongoing projects in terms of preventive maintenance, the resolution to some of our afternoon trustees, Scott. But the rehabilitation and the implementation of a BAS system, which is going to certainly help us do better management of our infrastructure, as well as all of the pumps, bells, and whistles that go with that.
Speak to the power outage at Aquaponics.
One of the things, as I'm reminded, is we did experience a power outage this week, and without getting too overblown in it, the power outage occurred on our primary site, which we have no control over. That's all in Commonwealth Edison. But what it did to us was put at risk our entire aquaponic and hydroponic garden. So what we are moving forward to do with that is to now put in an emergency generator system to back that power source up. We won't cover all of the two buildings that it affected, but we will cover the aquaponic and hydroponic garden. And we should have preliminary costs developed for that by, I'm going to say, no later than Tuesday of next week. And we hope to move ahead with that, with internal funding for that.
What's ComEd's response been on all that?
Well, ComEd responded very rapidly. They were out here basically within 5 minutes of our call. But I think what assisted that is because you lost all of your power east of the campus, all your traffic signals. You lost everything. You know. But again, we were very fortunate that no long-term damages occurred in our hydroponic garden, and we were able to get that right back up.
You touched on Mike, too. Monique talked about the professional development. I thought that was
I'll say that again, sir.
Professional development.
Yeah.
Well, we're doing several things with professional development, and one of them is our landscapers. We do classes, and we send our people to classes to be more informed about what they're doing in terms of our green space out here. Well, we do the same thing with our building service workers to make them more conscious of the type of chemicals that we use, and also that people are more informed about how to maintain our facilities. We have approximately 1.25 million square feet of internal space over 12 buildings. It's no small chore to be sure that you have an adequate staff, and that staff is adequately informed as to how to care for these facilities. So we make every effort to do professional development and send our people off campus and invite companies onto campus to give us seminars and lectures on how to best take care of our facilities.
Excuse me. You stipulated that October 23rd, there would be, we could expect the elevators to be working in the Cook Building.
Yes.
But the Science Building and the BHS are predominantly used by our disabled students and students who need assistance getting up and down. So is there an approximate time we could expect those elevators to be in service?
Yes, ma'am, there is. I believe the project manager for that has distributed for everyone's information the schedule of elevator operations. What I think maybe is being overlooked is, though we said we were doing five elevators, what we've done mechanically is we've attacked all five of those elevators concurrently, meaning that any type of mechanical work like evaporators or condensers have already been done. What we're trying to do is minimize that total 16-week time frame down to something more manageable for us, so that when we have people that have to relocate classes from the upper floors down to the first floor, where we do have ADA compliant and accessible means of getting to these classes, that is accomplished. So in short, when we move into our next building, adequate notice is given to the Office of Disabilities, where we can make adjustments for those folks that are a little bit challenged about getting upstairs or to upper levels.
I'd like to
further answer. I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead.
To give more specific answer to your question, there is a timeline for the project for both BHS and the Science Building. It is January for those buildings to be completed. And then for the other two buildings, it would be the beginning of April.
Thank you, Mike. I'm not going to belabor it, Mike, as we talked about, and I think President Watson gave you a hard time about it, but, you know, I thought the response was slow, and that's a long time, you know, to go with those elevators non-functional. I know a lot of that's out of your control, but I think we can use that just to know next time. I mean, particularly for those students, so. But again, I know we talked about it, so I'm not going to belabor it, but I just want to make that point again.
Can I have an explanation on why it would take until the end of the school year to have that project completed? Or is it a long explanation?
No, I think Mike can summarize it.
Well, to give it to you in a brief summary, Trustee Scott, the elevator project is essentially driven by CDB. And when I say that, I mean the administration of that project. They determine the schedule. They receive all the submittals. As you know, and I think I mentioned the last time we spoke about elevators, the initial elevator submittals were rejected by CDB, which again threw us back into a longer period of time because the contractor had to resubmit all of his submittals. Well, actually, two things occurred there. The first time that the elevator project was initiated, the majority contractor didn't have adequate minority participation, so it had to be rebid again. When he came back and met that goal, then by the time he got the minority elevator contractor to make submittals, those submittals were rejected, and then he had to resubmit all over again there. During this time, we had already requested that we get an accelerated schedule that would shave approximately 5 weeks off of the original schedule. That couldn't go forward until the submittals were actually approved. So by way of some convoluted administering of the contract, those are the factors that entered into this whole process.
Who selected the contractor that was going to work with Capital Development?
Capital Development Board makes that selection. Okay. We are, in this case, we are only the users.
We're just captive. Huh?
So we're really at the mercy of them for a lot of it. So. We just couldn't control a lot of the time frame. I still think it's long, but, you know, as Mike said, a lot of that's at CDB. There's not much we can do. These guys, I mean, they move as quickly as they could.
So
I understand that we may be at their mercy. I'm trying to figure out is there any opportunity to talk to them about their process? I mean, it just seems like, you know, they're not visible. We are, and this isn't working.
I had reached out to them, and I can't remember if this is the one that we declared an emergency on.
That's right.
Or yes. Not. Mm-hmm. And pushed pretty hard with the top, saying that, one, this is an emergency, and did everything but say, guess what? If we're sued, you're on the front, you know, you're on the front end of the lawsuit. At that point, they moved it up. Surprisingly, it seems like it's long now. It was going to even be longer, and we got them to move it up. But it's really the state bureaucracy's insensitivity to what we're faced with. And I don't know what else we can do other than.
Well, on the whole issue of the CDB, because you talked to, I mean, I'm very concerned about the Douglas Hall and the pharmacy accreditation, because we have the visit in April, I believe. And so there has to be, is the money there?
No, the money has not been funded to CDB, but that comes to us as a grant. This morning, I did call down to the Office of Management and Budget, to Mr. Weems' office, and trying to find out where we're at and how soon can we anticipate that those funds will be released owing to the serious nature of our accreditation. But I haven't gotten a response back yet from Mr. Weems' office, nor have I gotten a response back from CDB. This is something that we put on the front burner. We're being very insistent and doing our best to get this thing addressed as soon as we can. But that is
just... Well, you commented earlier that you thought it would be helpful that the board could possibly help in
this.
And I guess I'd like to hear, you know, how that would work. And what I wonder is if it also might be something where they ought to be hearing from the students in the pharmacy program,
yes,
who should
very properly be concerned that their degrees are not going to get them where they want to if this program's not accredited. I mean, that's where the impact is ultimately. You know, we can all be unhappy about it, but these are students who are counting on
yes.
the fact that and we have the plans in place to enable them to graduate and to have accredited degrees. It seems to me that the most powerful voices might be theirs.
And you're correct. This is Monique Horton, Assistant Director of Facilities. Some of the efforts that the university has made under Dr. Watson to actually progress the project so that during the site visit in April that we meet some of the accreditation requests are to move forward with the three research labs. So those were criteria that the accreditation board previously had put forward as some of the needs. The College of Pharmacy, they felt comfortable with if the research labs were done by the time the site visit occurred in April, that the accreditation board would be appeased by that. However, in addition to that, there are the spaces for classrooms, such as the two additional lecture halls that are supposed to be built on the third floor of Douglas, that remain even past the initial site visit in April, that they're concerned about for the next visit that they will have. So I think the concern for the April visit will be met with the research labs that the university has funded in order to move forward with that, which is the one that we presented last time, which were at about $750,000, which we're moving forward to that. But there's the need on two fronts. One is the grant that we're moving forward with so that there'll be no further loss of property, which is for the roof of Douglas Hall and the building envelope. That money is what Mike Orr spoke about earlier, which is in the with the comptroller releasing the funds very near future. Second is the $15 million, which would be needed to build out the rest of the third floor space. So there's about one third of the third floor space that's built out now, and then there's an additional two thirds that the $15 million would help to continue to build out. And that would be after the site visit in April, that they would be looking for those things to be actually met. That would also come in the form of a grant from CDB to the university. And yes, I think the recommendation to have student involvement in order to move the initiative for the $15 million is something that we can help to propose to the CDB.
And you know, when we say that the dollars are not there, the dollars are there, but they are prioritized to other entities. And it's really who can leverage them. And we have the Senator of Over Appropriations doing as much leveraging as he can, which is Donnie Trotter. And Donnie this is Donnie's area. We sit in his Senate area. And Donnie is really leveraging. We have had I have personally talked with Mr. Wims' office. He's over the budget. And, you know, Wims is actually from this community. And we're pushing the buttons. We always need more buttons to be pushed and would appreciate them. And I love what Trustee Hill is saying. Get the pharmacy students to start writing some letters to the governor, because that's where the decision is, to be honest. He makes that decision.
We've also had the assistant majority leader write letters and call as well, Kimberly Lightfoot.
And everyone that you just spoke of has been contacted again today, just so in hopes that I would be able to give you a more positive update as to where we're at with these efforts. But Senator Trotter's office has been spoken with today to again prevail upon these guys to help us move this process forward. We have also contacted Mr. Weems' office this morning to again prevail upon him to, with more urgency, as to how dire our needs are to get these funds released to us.
Mr. Orr?
Yes, ma'am.
Kimberly Lightfoot is my senator, mm-hmm. and if somebody would write me a piece that I could read to her over the phone and or email and or write her, I'd be very willing to do that. I'd be willing to go and have a meeting with her and maybe bring some of her constituents with me. So, and maybe students here or something like that. So if you could prepare that kind of a piece for me, I would appreciate it. And I guess the other board members might be willing as well.
Okay.
And the pharmacy students too, to contact whoever you think. You with Donnie Trotter, the governor, Kimberly Lightford.
Okay, well, as soon as the leaders take care of it, we'll send that to you.
So if you email that to me, then I'll.
We'd be glad to.
Ms. Horton will email it to you next week.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Good, Trustee Hill?
Very good. Thank you.
Trustee Scott?
Thank you.
You all right with that? No, good question. One other question for me, Mike, was the, that I was concerned about was C. Cole's workspace.
Yes, that's
any update there?
Douglas Hall, and the update there is October 4th is our anticipated completion of that space, and she should be in there with no problem. However, we were still looking for another project to attach to that space that has, we haven't gone forward with yet, and that's because of the power requirements that are special to her needs.
But her current relocation is, it hasn't affected any?
Her current relocation is going forward, and October 4th, she should be in her space.
Perfect. Great, go ahead.
Okay.
That was it?
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
There is one point that the president wanted to bring up regarding the metro station. There is a color copy, and for the record, we will submit also a copy of the conditions, the deteriorating conditions of the metro stop, which is a part of the electric district line on the 95th and Chicago State stop.
This is a metro stop?
No, that's not the metro stop itself.
There is a station, and that is a picture of the station. However, underneath that viaduct is where our students have to travel in order to get to the stop. We feel that this is not acceptable, and so we are trying to move forward to some of the legislators, some language, in order to make them aware of the conditions of this stop.
Metro is responsible for a lot of that cleanup that has to be done. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so there is a metro stop there, and that is directly contiguous to our property. It is contiguous to our property, right next door, and that is 95th right there at Cottage Grove. Our students and anybody in the neighborhood has to get off there, walk through that water that is always draining and running. The walls are decaying. And the question is, you know, why would anybody want to use that station? You don't feel safe. It makes our property look like a ghetto. We spent a lot of time in the last year cleaning up our property, and right next door is state-owned property, Metra. So we're passing it down. We wanted you to see it, and we're getting ready to enter some discussions, strong discussions with Metra.
So that we're alderman. Who's the alderman in this ward?
You're sitting kind of on the fence here in terms of wards. There, six ward is Lyle, but you're actually out of the six. But we're more or less kind of gerrymandered into the sixth ward. So you're looking at the seventh ward alderman as well as the sixth ward. I think it takes two efforts here.
And but the vice chairman of Metro is,
we have talked
is
to
Larry
Huggins. Larry has been on campus for us to address these issues. We've made several other inquiries to Metro because Mr. Joe DeLorean from Metro continues to call us and want us to fix a problem that appears not to belong to Chicago State, because the first repair was done by Metra, the second repair was done by City of Chicago, and we have submitted to legal counsel on our end the abandoned water lines that feed, that this little building you see on the bottom, that it feeds to. Now, we have certain issues with this because it's somewhat in limbo as to who actually now owns the property. As Mr. DeLorean of Metra tells me, the consideration was to let Metro continue to use the roadway to access their yard. This occurred because we used the roadway as a construction route when we were constructing the Convocation Center. But
so you don't know who owns that building right
now? At this point here, no ma'am, I do not.
Have you called City of Chicago Building?
No, I haven't.
I mean, this is one of those building issues. You can call the building commissioner and say, look, this is an abandoned building. It creates a hazard?
Well, the building isn't completely abandoned because it was originally their switching building.
There's actually two buildings in the photo. One building that's the closest to us, that's the property that's in question. The second building, however, which is just in the deteriorated state, is owned by Metro. It is their substation. However, going underneath the viaduct is probably one of the largest concerns because it's not properly lit. It's a safety concern. And if our students have to go to that stop, there are other stops in the city that we feel are better developed, and we should have that same right to
who
have.
Who manages the viaduct? The city?
There are some questions about Metro's responsibility between and the cities. So there are probably more people that need to be brought to the table on this, but Metro is definitely one that has responsibility.
You said, President Watson, you said that there were some folks that you were going to reach out to on this one. I can't remember who the individuals were, but I'm just curious if you had done that and what the response was.
We did reach out to Larry Huggins.
I reached out to Larry.
It was Larry. Yeah, okay.
Larry is vice chairman of the board for Metro, but let me be honest. We have not gotten any response that is appropriate. We get words.
Yes.
There is not the political will, and the political leverage has not been applied that will make Metro address it.
Even from Larry, he wasn't helpful.
Nope, Larry
well,
was not helpful.
Well, what happened there was that Metro was telling us that anything and any improvements made, we would have to pick up an 80% share of the improvement cost.
For Metro Station.
I mean, I don't know the law on that, but I can't imagine that to be true. I mean,
no, again, I'm only reciting what Mr. Huggins told us at a meeting that we had here on campus, that Metro didn't have the money to rehabilitate the area, and if they were to do that, they would only be capable of supplying 20% of that cost.
So what's our recourse aside of paying for it?
Pardon me, sir?
So what's our recourse outside of paying for it? Like, what's the next steps? If Larry's not helpful and they're saying that we have to put up 80% of it, I mean, what's the
next
step?
I might try and get an article in a newspaper on it or something. Because there's not another Metro station in this city
that looks
that bad. And only, let's be honest, the only reason why that station looks that bad is because it is in this section of the city.
It's in our community.
Yeah. And how could Metro justify charging the University of Chicago to repair if they had a Metro station looking like that with an abandoned building and expect their students to walk through? There's no reason we should be asked to even pay for that because technically that platform is their property. Yeah. So pressure definitely needs to be applied to them.
Well, can you do this for me, Mike, Monique, and President Watson? I think we got to have a plan of action, a specific plan of action of next step on this. Whether it's if you want to make it a public issue, get something together. We got to figure that out.
We're drafting two letters now.
Okay.
To who?
One to the governor, one to Metro.
But you ought to be dealing with the city of Chicago. You should be dealing with your alderman, your alderman who boards that ward, because this is an issue for not just Chicago State community. It's an issue for the community generally, and it should be pointed out that the Hyde Park University of Chicago community is much better served, and this is an issue of immediate concern for the safety of the students.
And you're looking at the west side of the tracks, the east side of the tracks, where we've got our other property, where our baseball team is, where our other programs are, is in even worse shape, but overgrown.
Well, I'm just saying, I think it's not just an issue for. It's an issue for many.
So, Chief, you'll do that. Get back. Exactly. You'll get back to me on that. Yeah. I just want to see what the letters are, who they're going to. I just want to make sure we got a plan. We're not going to get help from Larry, then we've got to go somewhere else.
We'll draft them to Patrick for next week, and then
I think our legal counsel should be.
We'll draft some language for Patrick.
I'd like to say that in talking with Donnie Trotter's office, Don did say that under a program called CREATE, there was state monies made available for Metro to do rehabilitation of various Metro stops. And I don't know to the extent of, I don't know to how they identified which stops would qualify for these funds, but I can certainly.
I think they're repairing every single road and viaduct that I drive through.
Okay,
and
under CREATE.
Somebody should just contrast where the University of Chicago students get to walk, and where the Chicago State students get to walk.
So included in the letters, we can also send photographs that compare,
right?
Please.
And the difference in lighting that they choose. It's very important, because there's a safety issue when you have students who are wondering whether or not they should even get on the train to come to school because they're afraid of being mugged or attacked under a dark viaduct. Let's keep in mind, we have a lot of non-traditional students who travel between 6 and 10 p.m. when Metro is running a lot. So we need to make sure that these aren't issues that our students have to deal with, because down the street, it's not even an issue. That's not across the city. That's down the street.
Exactly.
So, and it's still the case that the students have to flag that down, right? It won't stop.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other issue that we're bringing forward is that it is a flag stop, and we would like that it would not be a flag stop.
Right. I'm just wondering, Dr. Williams, you think, I mean, there's some other people from a legislative point of view that we could reach out to maybe be able to apply some pressure from the side?
Well, also, we talked about Senator Maloney, since we have students coming from the suburbs as well. So Senator Maloney is a possibility as well.
Yeah. Now, is that are those discussions you'd rather President Watson have, or would you rather somebody from our board reach out to, like Maloney? I mean, I could reach out to him or anybody, any of those people.
We reach out to Senator Maloney. Okay. We have good relationship with him.
Okay. Thank you.
Great.
Is that it?
Thank you.
Yes,
so I did also just want to add, I know this list gets long every time I see you, Mike, but Mike did spend some time with me on the first day of school and took me around all these issues, and I got to see him firsthand. And there is some real improvement being made there. I'm actually was pretty excited to see that. So thanks for the work on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think I saw you, Patrick.
Yeah. The next item on the agenda, just briefly, is the university is in the process of making application for its liquor license. Generally speaking, the State Liquor Control Act prohibits the sale of liquor at any state-owned facility, but an exception is carved out for universities. And so what the university is in the process of doing is making application to sell liquor at the Jones Convocation Center, the library, and the Cordell Reed Student Center. Once we receive that license, it would be up to the president to carve out the particulars of that those policies.
Great. And I had made the point that I was very much against liquor being served at student events.
Okay.
So not outside events like concerts and such, but at game sporting events. I thought that should be something we should consider internally. You know, most universities, most large universities, I think outside of University of Illinois, don't allow that.
Right.
So I just thought that was more bad press, that we probably didn't need to have liquor sold at student sponsored events. So, but that can be a discussion we can have internally after that license is acquired. That was my only comments on that, Patrick. Any other trustees have any thoughts on that?
Would that change our campus from a dry one to one that students can bring liquor in, you know, at will?
No.
And that's the point I was trying to make, that it's different if it's a concert in a convocation center, because that's not a student event, that's not a school event, you know, whereas a basketball game would be. So I would strongly suggest that we prohibit any sale of alcohol at student events. So I was just curious if the other trustees had any thoughts on that.
No, I agree.
Great.
Are they going to talk about the emergency?
Did you want to talk about the emergency plan, Chief Watson?
Yeah.
Thanks, I'll pass that over.
Again, good afternoon, trustees. I was surprised that there was some concern relative to the ability of the campus to respond to emergencies and whether or not we were in compliance with the 2008 Campus Security Enhancement Act. I drafted a report to you that kind of lays out where we are on this campus. Our emergency operations plan was developed, went to the president and approved, and it's posted online, and it's called How to Stay Safe. This plan was approved by the City of Chicago's Emergency Management Department, that it met and exceeded the guidelines that were put forth by the state. During that same period of time, we produced a violence prevention plan from the committee that was then in effect. That violence prevention committee, which is also a requirement of the act, is headed up by Dr. Michael Edwards, and I think Dr. Edwards
Dr. Michael Edwards is here. He heads up both the Alcohol and Violence Prevention Committee that has taken this violence prevention plan. This plan was developed and not approved by the interim president because of the transition that was taking place. Dr. Edwards and his committee, which has been newly formed, is now in the process of updating this violence prevention plan, and they will present that to President Watson for his approval, and it will be posted online. The third part of the act that requires that we have a crisis action, it requires that we have a team to be able to respond to intervention with our students before we have incidents, and we have that team. That team is the BAIT team. It's called the Behavioral Intervention Team, and it's headed up by Mr. Andre Bell, who's the Vice President of Enrollment Management, and we meet on an every two-week basis. So the things that's required by the Act are here. We are now in the process. We have taken our emergency operation plan. We meet every 2 weeks. We plan to present that to our current crisis action team, which is part of the president's executive management team, and we will be presenting that update to them as a part of that. Now, the act also requires that both the violence prevention committee as well as the emergency operation plan is tested every year. Dr. Edwards is in the process of meeting his requirement to the violence prevention. On October 22nd, in conjunction with the city first responders and the Advocate Christ Hospital, we will have a test of our plan on campus. It is going to be a train derailment and a chemical release, and we will go through that whole scenario at that particular time.
What was that date?
October
22nd. 22nd. Right. Thanks. I did go through in detail. My only question for you was, you know, it seemed as though we were in compliance. My question was really an opinion question, you know, how you feel. Is what's considered in compliance satisfactory to you based on our school and our location and our students?
We can be in compliance.
It seemed kind of generic to me what's considered in compliance.
I mean, we can put these plans together. These plans are designed to be looked at on a continuous basis and to be improved and to be, that's why you implement these scenarios. Walk through these scenarios to see just what it is, how can we improve it. We can't, you know, to me, one of the biggest emergencies we can have is one of our students get violently attacked on our campus. And, you know, we can stick with a plan all we want. That can happen in while we're sitting here in this room. And that's what we're trying to prevent on a daily basis. Now, we have to be prepared for these large-scale emergencies. We have to be prepared for when we have these events now at the Convocation Center. So we got evacuation plans. We know how to deal with those. Those are the kind of long-term plans that this involves. But on a daily basis, we're concerned with the daily safety of our students. That's why we have our new three buses from Pace. That's why we're going to have the ribbon cutting on that, I think the 29th?
On the 30th.
On 30th for this month, but for our Pace buses. Now we've got about 8 drivers and we're going to be driving our not only off the campus now, we're going to be driving some of our students who have ability problems to and from buildings. So we're doing everything we can to get our students on and off the campus. The other part that came up was our preparation or preparedness for NIM, which is the National Incident Management System, and ICS. In the police department, up to the rank of sergeant, we have everyone that's been through all of the 6 trainings that's required by the Homeland Security, and we have 4 sergeants to go. Our provost has done all of the trainings herself, all the way through 300 and 400. Everyone on PEC is required to take 100 and 200. The entire athletic team and the events planning staff is required to take 100 and 200. So we're trying to train as many people as we can into ICS so they have an understanding of it. So if something does happen, God forbid, on our campus, we are ready to go.
That's great. Thank
you. Excuse me, sir. Just one quick question. Please forgive my ignorance. I don't exactly know what all is listed in your plan of action, but what would be an example of a plan of action if we were to have an on-campus shooting? How would students be notified as far as timing? Don't leave the building. You know, what would happen? Hypothetically, we wouldn't want that to happen at all, but what is a plan of action to deal with something like that if it were to occur?
The first plan of action is a response to the scene. That's our first primary responsibility, is to respond to the scene, determine what has happened, render first aid to the victim if there's a victim, and try to apprehend offender if there's offender on scene. Okay? Then through our various systems, which is our loudspeaker systems in our buildings, through our electronic signs, be able to send messages to the staff and students and faculty relative to what we want you to do and what we don't want you to do.
Have there been tests that all that equipment works?
We're currently testing all of our buildings on at midnight so we don't interfere with classes. Well, that's what we're doing right now. We're going through each one of our buildings and working with IT to fine-tune those signals that we can. We also would like, you know, we have a system called RAVE, and RAVE is our notification system. However, we've been told that we cannot make our students sign up for it. We encourage all of our students to sign up for RAVE. RAVE is used to give you any kind of emergency notification, whether it's a weather emergency, any kind of emergency on campus. So if you can help push our students to sign their own personal phones up to RAVE. And Guardian is the second part to RAVE, which allows a student to be able to send us a signal if they're going to be on our campus, and it takes them 15 minutes to get from point to point. If they don't respond to that signal within that 15 minutes, we get an alarm with that student's picture in our dispatch office. And then we start calling that student to see if that student's okay. But we have very limited number of our students sign up for it. So if you can encourage that, we would appreciate it.
I would be more than happy to.
We are. I just want to make an update to that. What Chief Watson said was certainly true until this year when we mandated that students use their CSU ID for all university communications. And the CSU ID, we can automatically load into our RAVE system, and we have automatically loaded it into the RAVE system. So the message to students is that important information that might save your life is going to go to your CSU email address, and that's why it's so important for you to log into Cougar Connect every day and take a look at your CSU email, because we are communicating all important information to you only to your CSU address. That's your bills, that's any emergency notifications. So that's a very, very important message to get out. I want the board to have confidence that every student has a CSU ID, and every one of those IDs is loaded into our RAVE system, and we will communicate with students via that methodology.
If I could jump in, as I was telling some of my trustees at lunch, I'm in the middle of college tours right now with my daughter, and these are the systems that you're describing are the same systems that I'm seeing. We were at Georgetown University and at Howard University. These are exactly the same systems, so these approaches sound to me as if they are state-of-the-art and best practice at major colleges and universities around the country.
That's great. Thanks for the update, Chief. Thanks, Dr. Edwards.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any public employee comments?
Hello, everybody. My name is Atara Jeffers. I'm a current student here at CSU. I'm a freshman, and I would like to comment on the Metro topic earlier. I live in Madison, a south suburb, so Metro is an important option and form of transportation I will have to take if I do not acquire a ride from my mother or a close friend who goes here as well with me. I would have to take the train. And an important issue was the Verdoc and how closed off and isolated it was, and how it was so hard to see people walk up the stairs or down the stairs, and how the abandoned building, there's a short little alley over there, and how unsafe and that environment is over there. And actually, I was advised, even by my mother, to ask for a police escort over there, because the times I would have to take the train would be really early in the morning where there are few people, or really late in the evening where there are fewer people. So, and as well as being dark, because as the seasons continue to go on, it will be getting darker quicker and earlier. So it's a very important issue for me, and if that could be a more area where it can be safer and more visual for the students, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
She can't get that escort both morning and evening. It's just, this is, our students call us from the Red Line and we pick them up. If she has to take the Metro and she needs to escort, just about what time the train getting, we'll have a car there to wait for it to escort it to the campus.
Great.
Both to and from.
Great. Okay. Thanks for those comments. Listen, they're heard and understood clearly. I think you see this is of heightened concern at the board. So we're going to do whatever we can from inside and outside to make sure that situation is rectified. So thank you. And thanks for continuing to come despite that. That's important to us. Thank you. Any other public or employee comments?
I move that we adjourn.
Second.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Where are you?